Hello, hello, and hello, everybody. Welcome back for another episode, If Not Now, When? Today, I am super, super excited to have our guest, Lynn Kraft, aka LG, to join us today. LG is a chief story officer at Share Snacks, founder of Storytelling for Entrepreneurs, and author and a best-selling book, Start with Story. He has filmed over 1,000 entrepreneurs, including founders of Starbucks, Whole Foods, Tom's, LinkedIn. He created and produced CNBC's first primetime TV series, American Made, and has produced over 1,200 videos for an incredible company such as Entrepreneur Magazine, Microsoft, Dell. He founded 8 companies, has raised $10 million in venture, and has served or has served on advisory board for South by Southwest, Dell, empowering 1 billion women. Today, LG have given over 50 keynote presentations, wow, and incredible companies such as HP, Dell, EY, South by Southwest. He's also mentored at Skill Accelerator, Founder Institute, and EBW Women Executive Accelerator. With that, my friend, I am so beyond excited. Please join me to welcome LG to the show. Well, LG, thank you so much for coming all the way here, meeting with today. We are so excited to have you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
What an honor. So tell us, LG, you have a very exciting life. Help us unpack. How does all that begin for you?
Most of my background can kind of be encapsulated around stories because of who I am, what I do, and what I try to put out to the world is that I remember specifically, you know, I chose engineering as my first vocation because I was good in math. So I was an engineer for a couple years and realized that wasn't for me. And part of that was I just didn't like being in a cubicle or on the manufacturing line all by myself. I wanted to be around people and be stimulated by other folks and other stories. So I quit my job, became a ski instructor, moved to the mountains, and did that for
a few years.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those things. My parents were like, you're doing what? but it was, I didn't have any overhead, so to speak, in life. And it was a great opportunity. And I always wanted to be a ski instructor. And I'd done it part-time for a while. So I lived in the mountains. And one of the great things about being a ski instructor is that you spend a lot of time with individuals. Mm-hmm. And most of the people that I was teaching during the week were business owners. They'd come up for a day or 2 days just to really just get some skiing in or get away. And I just loved that the conversations we had on the lift. So I knew, I think the bug for entrepreneurship was planted in those days on the lift chair, talking about all these different ideas and businesses they built.
What inspired you most about that when you listened to those conversations?
These were very hardworking individuals, but they were very passionate about whatever it is that they were doing, whether it was technology or services or they're making things, or they just owned a donut shop. It didn't matter. they just had this freedom to pursue whatever it is that they were, and they poured themselves into it. And I could see myself emulating that. And one of the reasons I had also quit being an engineer is I wanted to get my graduate degree. So I actually tweaked the different schools I was looking at to get my MBA. And I went an extra year teaching skiing and traveling, living in my car. So that was kind of cool. But I looked at programs, MBA programs that had really strong entrepreneurship tracks. And that's what led me to University of Texas here in Austin for their MBA program because they had a really strong entrepreneurship track. And while I was in the program in the MBA, it was standard MBA, but I got to meet a lot of local Austin entrepreneurs for this entrepreneur. They had an entrepreneurship track within the MBA program. And I just love the ideas and the learnings I got from them. And I knew that that was where I wanted to be. So out of school, I worked for a startup tech company. It wasn't my own. I worked for Sabre American Airlines first, and then I worked for a startup. And when I worked for that startup, it was the first time in my life I had a key to the door of anywhere I'd ever worked. I've been working since I was 14, but I'd never had a key to the door, and it was awesome.
What do you mean by key to the door? Sorry.
You know, if you work for a corporation, you might have a key, a key fob or a badge to get in, but it's not like you have ownership of the building.
Oh.
So just having that key to go in whenever I wanted, and I was always the first in and the last out, kind of the LIFO method. And I just really enjoyed having that kind of ownership, even though it wasn't my company, it felt like, because I was employee number seven. And fast forward a couple of years after that, we did really well as a startup. My best friend from grad school, she said, hey, I'm going to start this technology company, raising capital in the high-tech space for an AI company, artificial intelligence. This is a while ago, but it was for data mining. And that was, in and of itself, was a amazing, inspiring, and tragic story. It was like, it was one of those times where we had this opportunity in front of us, and it took us a long time to get the engine going. And we ended up raising $7 million and being on the cover of New York Times and Wall Street Journal and a number of other publications, because my business partner was a woman, young, redheaded woman. She was CEO. And we had this kind of data mining, artificial intelligence technology, and we had some great customers, CBS Sportsline, State Farm, and Frog Trader. And all of a sudden, when the dot-com crash happened, that company exploded. So we were on the cover of like USA Today for the exact wrong reasons, because this company raised all this money and crashed because we really hadn't kind of gotten our stuff together. We were still dependent when the market crashed because of the dot-com crash. We were still dependent on venture capital funding. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't raise money at all at that point in time. So we started working on selling off the technologies, and fascinating thing, we were getting ready to sell the company with a small team, and then 9/11 happened. And the entire technology sector came to a screeching halt. Oh. And so I was just kind of dead in the water. And the one thing I remembered from that win is that I'm sitting there in a 30,000 square foot office, or no, it was 10,000 square foot office. We'd had 32 employees, had to let them all go. We're just a few of us, and it was only me at that time. And I remember sitting, you know, the next thing I'm going to do, I want to be really good at it. I want to be passionate about it. And I want to be able to make a lot of money. That was kind of my three-tier criteria. And that set me off on this path where I did another startup, did okay, did another one, and that didn't do very well. And then I had a nice little exit from an online sports company. And at that point, I was like, okay, what do I want to do next? And my best friend, the same one that her and I's company had crashed together, she said, hey, I want to do this television show about women CEOs in the high-tech space, and they're raising money in Texas in the high-tech space. And I was like, yeah, I'll help you. And I didn't know anything about television or videos or filmmaking, anything about storytelling. But she was my best friend. I understood what she meant, why she wanted to do it, because at that time, this is in the 90s, 2000s, women were very rare in the high-tech space. And very few had raised capital as Ingrid had done. And it's a very chauvinistic, men first. It just wasn't, they just didn't treat the women very well. So the impetus for the show was trying to help and support and inspire future generations of women entrepreneurs. That was kind of the original impetus for it. So I really wanted to help her. I grew up with four sisters. I'm my mother's son. My best friend's a woman, so I'm around women all the time. So this is something I really wanted to do. And so we got in the process of trying to figure out how to create a television show out of Austin, Texas. And we didn't know anything, right? So we're
that's bold.
It was one of those things like we didn't know what we were doing, and thank goodness we probably wouldn't have done it. Ignorance is bliss in that matter, because it's a really difficult road to get a television show on air without any experience whatsoever. So we just started blazing trails, and our first project that we got was with the University of Texas. We're going to profile her mentor. His name was Dr. George Kosmetsky. And Dr. Kosmetsky was one of the first billionaires in Texas. He was the CEO of two companies, had two PhDs, well-known in the academic and technology space. And that was her mentor. Mm-hmm. And the university wanted to do a legacy profile piece on him. So Ingrid was going to be the on-camera talent interviewing him, and he was going to be the talent, so to speak, and there would be this 7 to 8 minute profile piece. So for us, it was like, wow, we're going to make a paid video. This is the first time I'm ever going to get paid as a producer video, just like Grant here, just making everything come together. And we set about doing it. We're interviewing him. I'm behind the camera with this other guy, and Ingrid's interviewing him, and he's talking to her about his legacy that he wanted to leave behind. And he said something to the effect, and so, you know, Ingrid, to really get a perspective on the legacy that I want to leave behind, why don't you interview some of my other mentees? And Ingrid's like, yeah, let's do it. Who are they? And he says, well, why don't you interview Michael Dell, founder of Dell Computers, and then Red McCombs, who's the founder of Clear Channel, which is now iHeartMedia. And in that we ended up filming both of those people as part of that legacy piece on Dr. Kosmetsky. And it was my first paid project ever as a producer. And I got to interview three billionaire entrepreneurs. And they were so different from where their backgrounds were. You had Dr. Kosmetsky, the academic, two PhDs. You had Michael Dell, who, you know, was at the University of Texas as a college student, and he used to hide all of the computer equipment in his bathtub whenever his parents came to town, so they didn't know what he was doing. And it was his kind of unique kind of college dropout story. And then we had Red McCombs, who grew up in Spur, Texas, arrived at the University of Texas with 10 cents in his pocket and just a real small town country boy, ended up becoming number 247 on the Forbes 400, owned the Minnesota Vikings and San Antonio Spurs, and the largest independent car dealer in the country. And it was being around these very successful founders that had built billion-dollar companies, in some cases, multiple ones. And I was just so inspired. I just wanted to do more of that. I wanted to do what you're doing. I want to capture these stories and share what I learned.
Yeah. I'm curious, what is the one thing that really stood out to you with those incredible, rich conversation with those smart men and women?
What's interesting about that question, and it's been proven over 18 years, I've been a video producer now, is that there really wasn't any one thing that was unique and different. And I share that with you is that I set out looking for those key things that I could take away. And there are. There are certain things. Like Red McCombs has this famous line that he always shares is that we're all given 24 hours in a day. And it's up to you how you manage and leverage those 24 hours. So it was this time management thing that we talked about before the camera started rolling that really got to me thinking, you know, it's up to me, however I set up those 24 hours, and I could be successful or unsuccessful. So that was important to me. Dr. Kosmetsky was all about thinking really big. He says, let's imagine you've got this company and you want to make, you know, X million dollars. He goes, think bigger. Move that decimal point over one place or two places. If you're going to make a $5 million company, why not make a $50 million company or a $500 million company? So they all had these different perspectives, but it made me think, for me, what I took away is there's not any one way to be successful.
Mm.
And it was this profound enlightenment that I discovered very early on. Because when you're around, you know, I filmed 1,000 entrepreneurs so far, and they're so different in their passions, in the time that they spend, in what their interests are, their experiences. You know, you've got 18-year-olds that are building billion-dollar companies. And Dr. Kosmetsky, he was 80-something-year-old when he's, you know, a billionaire. Different backgrounds, different experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think each of us needs to kind of find what makes us special that we can tap into.
And, the key to the door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. And what's next from there?
Well, we eventually ended up getting that television show that we were working on. It took us probably 4 or 5 years eventually from start to finish.
Wow.
And it was called American Made, and it was on CNBC. And it was slotted at 7 p.m. right after The Apprentice on Tuesday nights. And this was CNBC's first original programming, because all they had done, they'd have live broadcasting from Wall Street at 4 p.m., then the network would shut down and they would just run reruns from the NBC and networks. And so this was their first original programming. So a big risk for them, huge opportunity for us, but it was incredible. That show lasted, a number of years. We did 2 seasons on it. And, you know, our seasons were Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks, John Mackey, the founder of Whole Foods, Red McCombs, founder of Clear Channel, and now iHeartMedia, and a slew of other very successful founders. And that really, once I got to that level, when you're producing a primetime and producing and directing a primetime television show for a network like CNBC, that was like right up there with what I wanted to do from a storytelling standpoint. And that's why I've done it so long, is I've been capturing these stories of very inspiring and successful founders because I want other founders to kind of learn from them. And I've always wanted to help other people, but I found helping founders is one of my missions in life, mostly through story. I can help them with a lot of different things because I've done multiple companies. But the area where I've bled, sweat, and teared has been in entrepreneurial storytelling, you know, writing a book on it, diving deep in the art and science of it, filming over 1,000 entrepreneurs, producing hundreds, you know, 1,200 videos to this day, all so that I can help founders create, tell, and share their story. Mm-hmm. So that's been kind of my, not only my career as a producer and director, but also building a platform for storytelling. And then it kind of led to what I'm mostly doing now, if you want me to jump into that.
Yes, please.
And I had written a book called Start With Story. And that was a six-year endeavor, working on it every single day, first hour of the day, just trying to get this book out, trying to capture a lot of that information that I'd done. And I was starting to speak, being asked to speak on panels as a keynote speaker or just book review, things like that. And there was a conference here in town that I spoke at. And when I got done speaking, it was the afternoon. I was kind of starving. I was rushing to get out of there, go get something to eat. And I'm leaving. And I see this guy in the corner, kind of the worst spot in that conference. And he had some food. I'm like, oh, good. I'm going to get some food. Then I'll go eat after that. So I walked up to him. And I said, hey, I'll trade you some trail mix for my book. And he's like, sure. So we got to talking, and he had some samples there. So I started sampling it. And as he's telling me a little bit about the company, I'm eating the stuff and I'm like, man, this is really good. And he keeps talking and I'm like, wow, this is really good. And then, like, you know, 2 minutes into it, I'm like, his name is Peter. I said, Peter, I got to stop you. I'm like, what's in this thing? And he goes, oh, I'm glad you asked. And he just starts going off on all these different background stories on the ingredients and kind of his background and then how the product kind of came together and the packaging. And I was just really enamored by kind of the product was incredible, best trail mix I've ever had in my life at that point. And it was just, he was a really good guy. We hit it off right away. He used to teach skiing. And he also was a professional skier. So we hit that kind of synced up. He loved the outdoors. I did too. We talked about trail running and all kinds of stuff. But he also had this mission that was centered on sustainability, being one of the few snack companies that's plastic free, as an example. And he made this statement to me. And this was, he asked, hey, he was, Peter's a great guy. He loves to chat, like I do. Very long-winded storyteller. And he says, I'd love you to help with my story. I know we've got some great stories, but I'm going to tighten it up, make different ones, better ones, things like that. And I said, yeah. So he made this statement, though. He goes, when we're talking about sustainability, he goes, if you go on the snack aisle where our product is in Whole Foods, and this is the flagship store for Whole Foods in Austin, Texas, he goes, we're one of the few plastic-free snacks in the store. And I'm like, how can that be? This is Whole Foods. I mean, this is the pinnacle of natural grocers along those lines. So I kind of like, okay, yeah, sure, I heard you. But I went to the store the next week, and I walked the aisles. And I got to tell you, when it was depressing, it really was just kind of deflating. You think that here's this amazing, great store that John Mackey had created for so that we could eat healthy and take care better of ourselves and the planet, and everyone has single-use plastic. Mm. And it was one of those kind of inflection points for me that I really wanted to help Peter in this concept called Share Snacks was the name of the company. And I ended up helping him for another year as a consultant. Mm-hmm. And eventually, during COVID, I approached him. I said, hey, I've watched a lot of brands that I've been in part of, or I've helped, or I've filmed, do extremely well in front of me. And I don't think I want to miss this one. So I want to be part of it. So we ended up striking up a deal, and now I'm an equity owner and kind of Share Snacks. So yes. You can see here with the cameras. But it was one of those things that...
incredible.
It was... I had been mentoring CPG, consumer packaged goods companies, through a CPG accelerator here in Austin called SKU.
Yeah.
And at that point, I had been a mentor about 5 or 6 years, and now nine or 10. And so I'm always around these type of companies, but I didn't really necessarily want to do one. I just wanted to, CPG companies make for great stories because you have a physical product that you can give somebody, that you can show. It's like this thing, and I'd never really worked for a company where I had a physical product as a producer, as a high-tech guy. There's all these things I just couldn't give them, a physical product. So I knew how hard it was. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure I want to do consumer packaged goods because it's just not my cup of tea. But I was so enamored by Peter being such a good guy. He's from Vermont, salt of the earth type person, an incredible product in the trail mix, all organic, GMO-free, gluten-free, grain-free, all the accoutrements for a healthy snack. The brand was phenomenal. He'd done some incredible work on the name, kind of the packaging and everything else, but it was a sustainability mission. It was that vision. So how can we be kind of an earth first type company?
Mm.
And we've kind of been working on our vision, and now we've kind of come around, coalesced around this kind of a desire to be the most sustainable snack brand in the world. Even if we're not, it's just this massive, ginormous, big, hairy goal that we can say, wow, let's go out there and do this. And by all accounts, if you look at our track record and all the attributes about our company and about our product and where we source them for, we probably are, if not the most, we're in the top five most sustainable snack brands in the world because of everything that we're doing. And one thing I'll point out as an example, this is, and luckily you've tried this product, so you know how good it is.
I did.
So it's got this tube that we designed, and this is meant to be refillable. So we want you to keep this for a year and then buy our bulk bags that you refill it with. So, and those are compostable bags. And this tube is the glue, the paper, and the ink is all compostable, biodegradable. So even if this was to fly away on the ground, it's going to turn into dirt in months. So we can use this, reuse this, buy our compostable bags, compost those at home, and you have zero waste snacking. So it's our ways, it's our way of saying, look, there's a better way to approach not just good, healthy eating, but how can we do things that are going to support our planet? Because we only got one planet right now.
Wow, I love that passion so much, LG. You have such an incredible story. And I have sensed that since the different business you're part of and as a producer in the meeting all the incredible entrepreneurs and now back to share. It's almost like connecting back to your root of being an engineer. Now you're hands-on, you have a tangible product, you can show people, you can see people smile, see people share with each other, share stories along the way. What an incredible journey. Almost closing the whole loop together.
I don't know about that. I feel like I'm just getting started. So the journey's still going on. But it is, what's great about a company such as this is that all these things that I preach about storytelling, about why it's the most important asset you have as a founder, why that you need to create a great founder story, origin story, because you're going to use it for all aspects of the company. Mm-hmm. You're going to use it from the day you start the company to the day you sell it and probably even beyond. And for every activity you're going to be involved in, because storytelling is this, as you know, very powerful activity that we have as humans. We were groomed through storytelling as young children, and every culture on the planet has evidence of storytelling in it. So we as founders have this powerful tool that we have 100% control of. We get to dictate who, when, and how we share it, and then we can modify it towards whatever audience that we have, whatever channel that we're going to deliver it on, and whatever extra tools, if like if you want to have a prop, you can use it as part of your story. So I always tell founders, one of the most important things you can do is invest in your story, make sure it's a compelling, dynamic, and emotional heartstring pulling type tool that you can use to raise capital, get press, drive sales, recruit people, anything and everything that your company's going to need.
So let's talk about that. You know, as important as a storytelling is for entrepreneurs, what are the maybe some pitfall or some mistake you see founder make? And maybe on the other end, what do you think counts for a good story?
One of the biggest mistakes that founders make with their origin or kind of their founding story is it's just too long or it's too complex.
Define too long for our entrepreneurs who are listening.
It's usually going to be dictated by the opportunity that you're given to share it. So let's say if you're developing an investor pitch and it's a 5-minute presentation at one of those startup competitions. Rule of thumb, out of 5 minutes, if that's the time that you're given, you need to spend no more than 30 seconds of that time on your founding story. And it's less about just saying, okay, I got 30 seconds. It's more about making sure that you are putting that hook in very quickly so people understand the why or the opportunity or something that's going to grab their attention. So in those 30 seconds, you've got to do that. But also, it should be woven into the next 4.5 minutes as part of your investor pitch. Everything should coalesce around that kind of founding story. So if you're in an elevator, or maybe you're sharing an Uber ride or a cab ride, whatever that is, you've got about probably, I don't know, depending on how long the elevator is, 10 seconds to really kind of hook them. If it's a sit-down meeting with someone from the press, and maybe you've got, it's an all-day press junket and different people are going in that can come to stores, or maybe you got them on the phone, you're probably at 30 seconds to 60 seconds. And what you have to do is you got to hook them in. So most founders don't invest the time to make sure that the beginning of their story has that hook
Yeah.
And that their story is not too long-winded, so they're not interested after you've been telling it for a period of time. So that, that's...
Can we ask your elevator pitch?
You bet. Depending on, so when I'm talking about, I'll give you two different ones.
Okay, good.
If I'm talking about my role as a producer or storytelling coach or someone that's going to help them raise capital in the crowdfunding campaign, one of the things I'll say very quickly, and I use numbers for this as a way to condense my story, instill credibility, and make it as compelling as possible in a short period of time. I say over the last 18 years, I've filmed 1,000 founders, produced 1,200 videos, including the founders of Starbucks, LinkedIn, Whole Foods, a Container Store. So in that small amount of time, that can be 13 to 20 words, I've established credibility because of the length of time I've been doing it. Quantity, repetition breeds excellence along those lines. I throw in some big names there, Whole Foods, LinkedIn, Container Store, so that it's more credibility, so that you're not wondering, is this person experienced and should I be talking with them about what my needs are from a video standpoint? I've kind of already quickly and subliminally and subconsciously made you feel at ease. Like, okay, now I just need to know, make sure that this guy is the right fit for me, as opposed to, can this guy do it? It's obviously this person's doing. He's done stuff for CNBC. So those are tricks that I use. I don't know. I wouldn't call it tricks. What I've done is taken my background, condense it into a very small soundbite that I can use to convince people about my credibility, expertise, and why I'm someone you should invest your time, at least getting to know whether I'm the right fit or not. When it comes to share, in our space, very competitive. Consumer packaged goods, one of the most competitive spaces in the world when it comes to brand, because these companies put a lot of money into their branding, is that I focus on, this is a recipe that we spent 3 years working on, 52 iterations, 900 hours to get the exact right 9 ingredients. And then we spent another year sourcing those ingredients that means to make sure it only came from small family-owned organic farms. Once we did that, we decided to make our packaging as good as our recipe and our healthy was. So we went plastic-free with all of our packaging. We've got the first reusable, refillable, plastic-free container in the entire snack space, if not the entire food space. And we've done all of that to make sure that our brand is good for your taste buds, good for your body, and good for the planet. So there's something that I can use when I'm sampling in the store, when I'm pitching to an investor, when I'm talking to the press. I'm using numbers in the same way I did with my background as a producer. Now I'm using it to show you how much we've invested in making sure that this is a elevated tasting product, that it's all organic, GMO-free, gluten-free, grain-free, because we're sourcing directly from small family-owned farms. So you know it's good for your body, it's healthy. And then I throw in that last piece, good for the planet, by talking about how it's plastic-free, refillable, reusable, compostable, all those things to let you know that we've spent time and energy trying to become the most sustainable snack brand in the planet. So those are examples of investing time, elbow grease, if you will, to find what are those numbers? How am I going to say it? What am I going to pair it with? And here's another way that you can take some of those examples. In our space, it's very difficult to compete on taste. Everybody says their product is the best tasting, whether it's a drink, a snack, or a food item, everything. Oh, it's the best tasting. So rather than say that we have the best tasting trail mix on the planet, we use the investment that we spent. Think about this. 3 years working on one recipe. This recipe right here called Our Original. 52 iterations. So 52 different recipes to come up with those first 9 ingredients, because the number of ways that you can combine nuts and dried fruits is exponentially massive, right? So, and we spent 900 hours coming up with that recipe. So rather than saying it tastes great, we're sharing numbers to showcase how much time and energy, blood, sweat, and tears we've invested to make sure that you know we spent a lot of time. And we're going to let you taste it. We're going to be like, well, a lot of people will say this when we're sampling and we're talking to people, like, well, I got to try it then. Because it's like, we've like, what is it, 3 years? Who spends 3 years on anything? You know, 900 hours, that's a lot of time. So what you're looking to do as a founder is find those key numbers, these beautiful sound bites or just metrics that grab your attention, make it surprise you or impress you or just interest you in one way, shape, or form.
I love that.
So what founders need to do, and this is where it sounds so easy now that I've got all those numbers kind of putting together, but when you're starting out as a founder, you're working about, your story is just one of the many things you got to work on.
Yeah.
And it takes time. There's really it's very difficult to come up with a great founder story. You have to invest time looking at your background, your experience, what makes your product special and unique, how you're different from the competitors, how are you going to win in the space, why you. You got to go through this kind of investment activity of writing things down and then kind of putting it up on a wall or a document or a whiteboard and kind of like figuring out what's the most important thing I could say. If I have your attention for 5 minutes, it's up to me what I choose to share with you in those 5 minutes. So as a founder, you need to invest the time to make sure that not only what I tell you, when I tell it to you, how I tell it to you, and what I emphasize within those 5 minutes is going to dictate whether you invite me back for a second meeting, whether you write about me, whether you invest in me, buy my product, whatever. And it's just hard, requires elbow grease to come up with great stories. I can teach you very quickly how to come up with a good story, but to go from good to great can take days, weeks, months, sometimes years to come up with that amazing, powerful, compelling story.
So for some of our founders who are just starting off, likely they're not going to have a great story just yet, right? And you speak about good story is probably going to spend some time, a great story going to spend extra effort, but just cover the baseline. You know, for our listeners, what are some things you can share with them that could be grasped, you know, in a rather short time that they can start a good story for now and continue to work on becoming great later?
God, I'm going to share with you the short answer.
Okay.
And I'm going to share with you how I got to it.
Okay. Great. Let's hear
so
that.
So one of the fastest ways that a founder can come up with a good starting origin story or founding story is you want to think of an experience that you had that has a powerful meaning to why you started the company or how it put you on the path or something that happened in your life that made you want to do what you're doing. There's some experience that you've had that relates, that put you in that chair, that put me in this chair, that put Peter behind this idea. In that little moment in time or series of moments is this magical experience that you can bring to life. Mm. And I'll give you an example of how this came to me. This took years for me to figure out that short little anecdote. When I started writing the book called Start With Story, and the reason I wrote the book is everyone used to tell me, oh man, you're being around these successful founders, you should write a book, you should write a book, you should write a book. I'm like, after 3 years, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna write a book. And I just got done filming Gary Keller, the founder of Keller Williams. And one of the largest real estate companies in the entire world. And Gary had written a book called The One Thing. And he was speaking about it here in Austin, Texas at an entrepreneurship event. And The One Thing basically is the first hour of every day, you should focus on the most important thing that you want to do or the thing that will change your life the most. It's kind of encapsulated what it's about. And it was just right time, right place, right moment. I decided to, okay, I need to write a book. I don't know how to be an author per se, but I'm going to start. So every day for 6 years, I worked on that book, as I mentioned earlier.
For 1 hour a day?
1 hour. First hour of every day.
Including weekends?
Every day. Didn't matter. And sometimes I'd spend 10 hours, sometimes only an hour, but the commitment was 1 hour every day. I said I was going to do it for 40 days. That was my commitment, but that 40 days turned into 6 years. And as I'm writing the book, one of the things you need to do, if you're going to teach storytelling, you typically have to have some type of framework or theme or modality or process to take people through. So in my search to find a great template or a great framework, I started studying Plato and Socrates and the original playwrights, right? And then Gustav Freytag, who's this famous German writer who came up with the Five-Port Story. And then when you look into my space, filmmaking, there's Robert McKee, who wrote a book called The Story, and it's like 3 inches thick. It's like he's had 300 Academy Award nominated and winning films in his career. And the more I studied, the more I got lost. And obviously Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey, was the most famous one that I'd say. And I dove into that, and that is some great reading, but it's way too
dense.
Complex.
Yeah,
it's way dense. And founders, who's going to do 13 steps for anything? And I was like, there's just no way. I can't invest my time trying to share 13 steps or 10 steps and some of these other methods. And I'm like, you know, I just got to come up with my own. Let me just start from scratch. Let me go back to what I know. And I know founders. Because at that point, I'd been filming probably 600 or 700 founders at that point in time. So I went back to the scripts. I went back to the raw footage that I had. I went back and asked some of these guys, like, hey, did you ever take a class in storytelling? Did you follow a framework? And they're like, no. I don't even know what that means. And it helped and it didn't help. So I just kept diving in, and I was going back over my footage from Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks. And this was, for me, this was a light bulb moment. And to give you a little bit of background on him, he was working for a kitchen appliance company in New York City. And he had a client in Seattle that was buying the bejesus out of these espresso machines. So like any good sales guy, he flew out to Seattle to go visit them, discovered that they're a coffee bean company. And they were using espresso machines in their coffee shop to sell coffee beans. That's all they were selling. So he got enamored by coffee. He decided he loved Seattle. So him and his wife, they moved out there, started working for him. And while he's working for him, you know, he's helping the company grow, sell more beans. He went to a kitchen appliance / coffee conference in Milan, Italy. And this was a multi-day conference. So one of the days, I think it was on the third day, instead of taking a cab, he decided to kind of walk home in the kind of the alleyways of Milan, if you will. And as he's walking down this alleyway, comes around the corner and he hears it and smells it before he sees it. As he's rounding the corner, he sees this thing he'd never seen before called an espresso bar in Italy. And they're all over the place. But we didn't have them in the United States because you got to think back, pre-Starbucks, there really wasn't coffee bars. There might have been cafes or those kind of diner type things, but there really wasn't coffee shops in the way that we know them now. And he'd come upon this espresso bar and he could hear them talking in the romantic language of Italian. You could smell the aromas of the different espressos and coffees that were coming out of there. And the visuals, it was beautiful. I mean, this is Milan. This is the cobblestone streets. And there's a couple just having a romantic interlude at the diner. There's two guys that were sitting at that table. And they're kind of like yelling at each other, but they're just talking in Italian, which is loud. And the baristas are yelling all these venti, large, grande, whatever, all these different Italian names. And he goes, oh my God, this is amazing. Check out this. And he tasted it, enjoyed the espresso. He goes back after his trip, he goes back to Seattle and he tells his partners at that coffee bean company, he goes, you guys, we have got to launch an espresso bar here in the United States. And his partner's like, yeah, I don't know, Howard. We're a coffee bean company. We don't know bars and food service and all that stuff. And he's like, no, you don't understand. Let me share the experience that I had that happened in Milan. And he goes on to tell them that. So they gave him some capital. They let him kind of do it. He kind of twisted their arm and he opened this espresso bar called Il Giornato, and it was in Seattle. And it started doing really well. And he started running the coffee shop, right, or the espresso bar. And he was doing so well, he asked him, hey, we should open up a second one. This is doing great. And they're like, no, Howard, we're a coffee bean company. We're not going to do that. So we kind of went butted heads with them. And eventually, they decided to go separate ways. He would take the espresso bar concept, and they would keep doing their coffee bean company. But he convinced them to take the name, Starbucks. So Il Giornato became Starbucks. And what stuck in my head from all of that is that when he's talking about this over as we're filming him, interviewing him, he talks about, I took the experience that I had in Milan, and I used that to recruit people to come work for me, to raise capital for the company, to talk to the press about what I was doing, to drive sales whenever I'm in the store about creating this unique experience that I had in Milan that I wanted to bring back to the States. And that for me was that light bulb moment where I knew what a story meant when it comes to a founder. It's experience that you have had that has a meaningful relationship to the business that you're now doing. It's as simple as that. And what you need to do as a founder is find what that experience is, build a story around it. What's the narrative around it? And then peel that onion over time to make it richer, more compelling, more dynamic. You're adding details. You're pulling stuff out. That's the hard part. The easy part is like, there's a reason you're in that chair, Wynn. Tell me why you're doing this. So there's the why that drives the original impetus. But to make it go, take it from good to great, you've got to put that elbow grease in to find all those details to make it beautiful, to make it sing, to make it inspiring, to make it evocative. Because the reason we share stories is that I want to reach you on an emotional level. Humans don't make decisions based on facts or their analytic side of the brain. We may think we do, but in reality, we're making decisions based on what our heart tells us to do, mm-hmm. that gut feeling. So you need to reach people on an emotional level so that you can convince them to support what you're doing. And that's what it comes down to.
Wow, what a beautiful illustration. I can just smell that espresso bars as you speak about. I can also just see those old couples you know, having a conversation on the table, the two person yelling at each other. It's so beautiful. And I'm just curious, for founders who are first time listening to this kind of conversation, they were like, wow, this is so amazing. But how does that apply to my AI company? How does that apply to my golf tech, my healthcare tech, which is maybe not as maybe sexy and fun and exciting like a Starbucks or the sheer story that you just discussed? What do you think about that?
One of the things you're looking for is these provocative facts, emotional moments, inspiring activities or visuals or details. There's a lot of different ways that you can begin a story with. First and foremost, though, you have to get their attention. So you always want to start strong. Because
define start strong. Numbers, facts we covered earlier?
It's whatever's going to get your attention. Everybody has something different that inspires them, whether what they're dealing with right now, a problem that they're facing, something that they want to do, something that they're inspired by. So it really kind of depends on who the audience is, how much time that you have, what is it you're trying to convey to that particular moment. An example would be when you're talking to the press, their audience is readers. So you want to hand deliver sound bites to them that they can use as their title or as the beginning of their article so that they want to read the article. So whenever you're talking with the media, you're looking to give them and start your story with something that's going to evoke their imagination, or more importantly, the imagination of their readers. It's going to want them, you know, that you're solving a huge, massive problem. Like for instance, if you're, I'm just throwing this out there, our wetsuit makes you invisible to sharks. So if you live in Australia, you go swimming out there. So that's a headline grabber, whether you're writing for the press, you're an investor, either way, you want to learn more. And there's an actual company that had done it. It was a university type of technologies that they applied to wetsuits, and they were going to build a company off that. And I'll never forget that one line. I'm like, wow, that's super powerful, invoking those type of things. So depending on your audience will dictate what you're going to share. Usually, if it's good, it'll appeal to everybody, customers, investors, the press, future employees. If you've got an AI company, generally, you're looking at making some type of significant impact. So whether that be the speed that your technology can respond to an inquiry, or the ability to write incredibly well and much faster than hiring a freelance writer or your VP of communications can do, doing it better, faster, and give me 10 iterations that I can choose from. So what you're trying to do from an AI perspective is you're trying to I would say right now, you're trying to rise above the noise. There's so much noise around the AI space. So I've written two courses. I've built two online courses, and I've just finished writing a second course. It's like how to use ChatGPT to create a great founder story. So it's a short version of my longer course, but it's all about leveraging the power of ChatGPT, because it used to be that you can take my course or I can help you. I don't have time to help a lot of people. In fact, I don't hardly anymore. So the course was a way to dump all that information in the online training. But now with AI, I can teach them how to use ChatGPT specifically towards creating a story. So what I try to do whenever I'm talking about that, and it's still brand new, so I haven't even worked out the kinks in my own mind to make go from good to a great story. But I know there's going to be elements that are centered around, you're going to have your own personal storytelling coach and ChatGPT that's going to help you write better, write faster, more dynamic, different versions of your story, different lengths of your story, customize it for audiences, everything you need in this AI box that you can use on the fly whenever, wherever you're at to kind of do those type of things. So if you go back to your original question, so as a founder, you've got a story for whatever industry that you're in or whatever product or service you're trying to do. You're trying to think about what's going to capture the attention of my audience? What's going to get in their mind? Because ultimately, I want your mind share. I want you to make a decision to support me in one way, shape, or form. So if you're an investor, I want you to be able to see the opportunity, the size of the market, the moat that we're building around our product, or how this can develop into a lot of other products. It's the press. It goes back to what's going to interest my readers. If it's a customer, it's generally centered around what problem can you solve for me? How can you take what I'm dealing with on a daily basis and get me my time back or make sure that I'm the number one, whatever it is, and when I have space along those lines. So I'd always lean towards being evocative, startling, surprising. The more, the better, and just keep iterating on those different things. And really, when it comes down to, there's not any one magic number, magic word, soundbite, things like that. You're going to have, you should have, and I highly recommend that all founders do this. You take a whiteboard, sheet of paper, put it in a document, and say, what are the 5 to 10 things I could lead with? And circle the strongest ones. And go through it again. Double circle the strongest of those strongest ones and keep iterating until you get the, wow, that's a great soundbite. And then just start testing it on different people and what works, what doesn't work. In the case of Share, there's the challenge we face. There's so many different things we could talk about that make our product unique and special and everything else. We decided to focus on sustainability because we dominate everybody in the space. Even though we're a small little startup, no one can compete with us on our sustainability and conservation efforts. So we're planting our flag on that mountain, and that's what we're taking to market with us. Mm. But at the same time, if I'm talking to a health and wellness professional, they may not care about sustainability, but they are going to care about it's organic, GMO-free, gluten-free, grain-free. I can tell them there are no middlemen. We buy directly from the farmers. We have their names on speed dial in our phone. So you understand. So I'm articulating some value propositions in the form of a story or messaging that speaks to the audience that I'm with. Because when you get into the store at the customer level, it depends. For instance, when we started out, we knew moms would like our product, but we didn't know how much. And probably 60% of the people buying in stores when we do sample are mothers, usually with their kids. And it's because for them, it's an easy no-brainer snack. It's organic, so it's healthy. They can give it to their kids and not worry about it. And it's in this kind of cool container their kids kind of like. And it just so happens that speaks really well to the needs of a mother at home. I'm solving a problem that they have. So they'll see how those are all different, you know, kind of messaging, different stories you want to share, depending on who the audience is.
I love it. Wow, Aldrey, I love the way how you articulate methodically about a complex process into a distill something very, very simple. And I think everyone can have some takeaway from that insight. So thank you.
You're welcome.
What do you think is your superpower for success? You have come a long way, right, from engineer to ski instructor to multiple businesses and producer, now a storytelling expert / CPG company. Like, how does all that connecting to you, Aldrey, regarding your superpower?
What I've come to find about myself over the years is that I'm inspired to help people. So whether that's helping a founder with their story or making a video that captures the story of a founder that will inspire tens of thousands or millions of people, depending on where it's aired, or even sharing a snack with someone that, man, this tastes great, and oh, it's healthy for me, and I love the fact you're sustainable snack. I just like seeing people smile. I love the sharing of great energy with other people that I come in contact with. And for me, that's a superpower because I'm inspired by that. It makes me want to be around more people. It drives me to help more founders. It inspires me to figure out what other ways can we get our product out there to masses. And it applies to almost everything that I'm doing, whether that's, you know, this morning I'm working out because I want to be in great shape. And I see some kid who's walking by me, and he's just a little tiny kid, and I make him laugh as he's walking by. So, you know, that sounds kind of a simple, kind of goofy little thing, but it's almost the joy I get from making that kid smile is the same joy I get from helping a founder raise capital or get press. And to me, it's something that I don't use an alarm clock. I get up every day inspired to do what I'm doing. And I wish there was more time in the day so that I could clone myself one way so I could do more things and invest in all these different things. But I think the superpower centers on my desire to help others and channeling my gifts, my experience, my talents to do so in a way that can help you grow faster or launch your company or scale in a way that you never thought possible.
Wow, I love that. So, Aldrey, my last question to you is, what are some takeaways or ideas you want to partner with all founders who are listening right now?
Well, as you probably have guessed, and they have probably guessed already, is that you need to invest in a great founder story. You know, I focus specifically on business owners, but anyone that's an executive leader, they're owning a small business or they've got a startup that's in a fast growth scaling mode. You want stories and probably multiple versions. So I highly encourage them to invest in crafting a great, compelling story, have different versions of it, different links in it, so that you can use it all day, every day. And there's one really big reason for this as a founder. You go out to networking events, you volunteer your time to support different organizations here in town, helping people with their story and other things I've noticed, is that you're always given the opportunity as a founder to talk about what you do. Whether you're at a cocktail party or you're at a roundtable, executive session, team building type thing, someone's inevitably going to ask you, what do you do? And you're going to have, and you've been given a platform in that moment. And it will happen every day if you want it to. Just go to any networking event and someone's going to ask you what you do. So in that moment, that very special moment, it's your soapbox. You get to decide what you say and how you say it. So if you have a great, compelling story, that little moment in time can be the difference between success or growing fast or not growing. So that's the importance of it. You can use it all those things like that. The second thing I'll impart with founders that I think is super important is that there are moments of brilliance all around our life. There are elements of beauty and inspiration everywhere in life. And how we look at those is all based on our perception. I can say that I'm stuck in traffic, or I can say that, wow, this is a great opportunity to just kind of enjoy, put some music on, think about the meeting that I'm going to. Before I came here, I thought, what's the intention that I want to have with when? You can think about that. And you know, it's a half glass full type approach to life. But I believe when you approach things like that, especially as a founder, you need optimism and to pick yourself up and different moments of inspiration all day, every day for the entirety of your business. And if you just open your eyes to the world around you, you're going to find these moments of brilliance, these elements of beauty, these captivating, just brilliant, beautiful things that will push you into the next thing. So that's the one thing I encourage founders to do every single day. Practice it and you will get better at it too.
Wow, Audrey, that probably the best answer I ever got with that simple and boring question kind of. And you had this way to naturally capture people's attention in the most beautiful yet simple language to describing your thought, but in the most, I almost imagine I was watching a symphony unfolding in front of me as you used the word to just so beautifully articulate your thought process. And wow, what an incredible gift.
Thank you. One thing I'll share with you is that as we kind of wrap this up is that founders often ask me this question, like, you know, my company sounds like everybody else. My product, it's a super crowded space, or I just don't know how to rise above the noise. And it's always a constant challenge. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. It's pretty much every industry because the way that everything's been democratized from technologies, from AI, and just access to computing power and different things, it just makes it very difficult to get above the noise and differentiate yourself. And the one thing I share, and I don't want to leave with you as part of it, you know, a plug for my storytelling course. It's storytellingforentrepreneurs.com. There's a course on the Lynn_graph. So it'll be in the show notes so you can check that. If you want to dive more into this story concept, it's called Create is the name of the course. But one of the things that I teach is that no one has your story, and that is your power. What I mean by that is no one has the set of experiences that you've had over the course of your lifetime. No one has the network that you have, the people that have come into your life, that have influenced you, that have inspired you, that have pissed you off. And no one has kind of the knowledge that you've gained over that time from those people and from the world around you. And in those three parts of your life is where distinction is. Distinction is all across your life, in your life, coming back, growing up in China. You bring a very unique perspective towards what the United States is like, for instance, or what entrepreneurship is like here versus where you grew up, or the opportunities that are given to you, or how you look at food, or how you look at clothing and everything else. So your perspective, there's not one single person on the entire planet that has those three things: the people that you know, the knowledge that you've gained, and the experiences that you had. And in that lies your distinction, what makes you unique. And what you want to do is find those moments of distinction so you can differentiate yourself.
Wow, I love it. Again, LG, thank you so much for coming here with us, share such an authentic journey, but with such a friend and open conversation. I really believe that entrepreneurs are there and probably learn so much, so many goodies from today, but also they probably cannot wait to check in your book, your course, also the Share Trail Mix, right? Where can we get it?
So we sell online at sharesnacks.com. And also at Whole Foods and some other chain. We're in a lot of resorts and hotels, and we're just started pretty small. We're in the Southwest, but we're growing across the country in California, yeah, and New York and other places.
Amazing. Well, everybody make sure to get one because it tastes yummy. So with that, Chule, thank you so much, LG, for coming here to with your time, with your incredible wisdom. Thank you so much. Also, thank you for everybody for tuning in today. We hope you enjoyed it as much as I do. And I cannot wait to see you all next week. Bye, guys.